Hello, good people, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. The Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we think and feel. And today, I have a fantastic guest who is visiting us from Copenhagen, Denmark, and her name is Barbara Berger. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you very much. Hello.
Hello, and you have written many books and have quite a lovely story. I would like to share with the listeners a bit encapsulated your journey. You left the United States where you started and ended up in Copenhagen and became an inspired writer. Would you please share with us a little bit about how that happened?
Okay, well, it's a very long story, but the short version is that I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., as you know. And I grew up there because my father worked in the Pentagon. And in the 1960s, I had a boyfriend who got drafted to go to Vietnam. That was the Vietnam War days. And we were against the war in Vietnam, and I was just a young teenager there. Then I was about 17, and it wasn't a very popular position in my family since my father was a very high military man working in the Pentagon. So I ran away from home, and we were actually went underground for a couple of years because at that time there was the draft, as you know, and Steve, my boyfriend, he had the choice between going to Vietnam or going to jail for 5 years. So we were actually some of the first people who were really against the war. So we went underground and we were in many different countries, and we actually ended up getting political asylum in Sweden. So that's actually how I came to live in Scandinavia. I actually lived in Sweden for 2 years before I moved to Copenhagen, Denmark. And so, yeah, so that's the short version of how I got here. I'm still here.
Wow, all these years later. And what inspired your writing career? You've written many books, and several of them have been translated in many languages, and they're all, from what I can tell by the titles, quite focused on helping yourself, helping people help themselves, you know. Can you tell us how you became inspired to focus on the genre and how this most recent book of yours, The Awakening Human Being, The Guide to the Power of Mind, evolved?
Well, after I had that very dramatic start in life, I was, you know, always asking myself the question, you know, how can we make life on planet Earth better? And, you know, how can we put an end to suffering, and how can we lift the consciousness of ourselves and our fellow beings? All of these basic questions, I really started asking them at a very early age. And so after that first youthful rebellion, I continued here in Scandinavia. First of all, we had a health center where our original focus was on food and organic farming and living in harmony with the planet and all that stuff. And I wrote some books about that, living sort of simple living in harmony with nature and so on. And we had this really big center, and a lot of people would come for consultations, people with problems of all kinds. And I started to realize that living a healthy lifestyle and eating well wasn't the answer to all our problems, that there was another aspect, that there was a mental or psychological or spiritual aspect to ending suffering and to finding a way out of the problems that most people face. So I started exploring, first of all, psychology and then spirituality and the science of the mind, and that's actually that's where all these books come from, the quest that I've been on to find answers. And my latest book, The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind, is really, you could say, a summation of a lot of the stuff that I found out over the course of many, many years.
Well, this book, I really enjoyed this book. I really find it extremely accessible, and if I were to put a vision to it, I would say it's like a tree, a good strong tree, and from this very basic strong tree understanding, many branches and leaves form, but it's a good solid base to really get your head around some of the real basic stuff.
Thank you so much. That's very, I love the image. Actually, I usually say to people that the book is a practical spiritual handbook for the awakening consciousness that's arising on planet Earth right now. In other words, what I've tried to do in this book, together with my son, actually, Tim Ray, we work together, and we have a center here in Copenhagen together, and we teach together. In this book, we try to map out the science of the mind and present a deep understanding of the nature of consciousness. That's the first half of the book. And then in the second half of the book, we try to give practical tools and exercises of how you can actually use this information in your daily life to live a happy life and to free yourself from whatever problems and challenges you're facing. So this book is as you say, it's the fundamental teaching that really tries to map out the way consciousness and our minds work, and what we can use this information to achieve.
Absolutely. And I appreciate your ways of breaking it down. Would you like to share with us a little bit more in depth, perhaps? Your mental laws are something that you've written about and have become quite acclaimed for. And I wonder if you'd like to share a little bit about those. And I really enjoyed them.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, actually, before I talk about the mental laws, I'd just like to say to our listeners that the mental laws, which is the first part of the book, which is my sort of scientific explanation of the way the mind works, you can download the mental laws for free on our website. So if you go into our website, which is Beam Team, www.beamteam.com. If you go in on our website, the mental laws you will find the mental laws under one of the drop-down menus, and you can download them for free. So if you're interested in what we're talking about, please do that. The mental laws are what I sort of say my scientific explanation of the way the mind works. What I have discovered is that, well, just as there are physical laws, there are also mental laws. A physical law, let's start with that. A physical law is like the law of gravity is a physical law. The law of gravity applies to everyone at all times. In other words, it's an impersonal mechanism that affects all people, whether or not we're aware of this law. So in other words, if you stand up on the top of a building and you jump off, you will fall down and hit the ground. It doesn't matter if you're the President of the United States or if you're a little old lady or if you live in China. It doesn't matter if you're young, if you're old. It doesn't matter if you're rich or if you're poor. It doesn't matter even if you know about the law of gravity. It's a law because it's an impersonal phenomena that affects everyone. And I discovered that in the same way there are impersonal phenomena that we can understand that which tell us how our minds work. And that's what I call the mental laws. And I discovered that the problem for most people is that we don't know about these mental laws. We don't understand the ways our mind work, and therefore we are, you could say, innocent victims of a phenomena that we don't know about. And I have discovered that by understanding the mental laws, by understanding the ways in which our mind work, that we can actually start to use our minds in a much more positive and constructive way. In other words, we take back the power that is really inherent in our nature, but because we haven't understood it, we haven't really been able to use it to create and live the life that we want to live. So a mental law, let's take one. In the book, I describe 10 mental laws. One of them is, for example, what you focus your attention on grows. Or another one is, your thinking determines your experience of reality. Let's talk about that one, because that's actually the most basic fundamental mental law. To explain that, I would have to say we first of all have to start by looking at the fact that reality is, well, if we define reality as what happens, events, things that are taking place, then we have our thinking, which is the way in which we perceive and interpret events and circumstances. We have to slow down the way the mind works in order to see that what we experience in life is not so much what happens. We experience our interpretation of what happens. Now, this is a very, very important point. Let me try to give you an example so you can understand what I'm talking about. Let's take the example of an event that's called a divorce. Now, what is the reality of a divorce? A divorce is when two people who have lived together separate and no longer live together. That's the reality of a divorce. Now, what happens when two people get divorced? Well, one person gets divorced and they think that divorce is terrible. They have the story that, you know, oh my God, it's the end of the world. I'll never find love again. I'm going to live alone for the rest of my life. I'll always be unhappy. This is a terrible loss. So that's their interpretation of this event. And therefore, their experience of divorce is depressing. They get sad. They get depressed. Another person gets divorced, and they have the story, hallelujah, I'm finally free. I'm on my own. I can start my life over again. So that person gets divorced, and their story is that divorce is a liberation, so they're happy. Now, in both cases, the event itself is the same. Two people who work together are now separating. But the experience that the different people have depends on their thinking, the thoughts that they are entertaining, the interpretation that they have of the event. This is such an important thing to notice, because understanding this mechanism is the key to freedom and the key to living a happy life, actually. Most of us, and me included until I figured it out, most of us are so identified with our stories, are so identified with our interpretation of events, that we don't see that the event in itself is neutral. So therefore, we have the idea that this event, which is outside of ourselves, is causing us to feel bad. So we give our power away. In other words, the person who thinks, you know, that divorce is terrible, it's like the terribleness is outside of themselves, and they become a victim of their own story. They lose their power. They don't think they can do anything about it. But if you start to understand that it's only your interpretation that's making you suffer, then it's like, wow. I mean, it's so liberating to understand this, because then you can say, well, is it true? First of all, you can question it. Is it true, for example, in the divorce story that, okay, am I going to really be alone for the rest of my life? You can't know that. I'll never find love again. You can't know that. You know, I'll be alone, I'll be sad, it's the end of the world. All of these catastrophic thoughts, if you realize that they are in your head and they're not out there, it's like you can say, okay, is this a sane interpretation? Is this constructive? Does this lead to me living a happy life? So people who I've been working with, people who read my books, who start to understand this, it's like a total transformation in their life. So, yes, the mental laws. Please go into my website and download them and take a look at them.
They're so basic, and I really appreciate the simple structure of it, you know, watching your thoughts arise and then witnessing them, and then the whole process of understanding the thought from the emotion. And now the book doesn't go into the emotional component very much, but it does include it. And it integrates it as well in the end when you make it really plain that, hey, some days are good and some days aren't, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the whole point is to become more proactive with the thought process, with the mental activity going on. And this is what this book is focused on.
Well, I think what you just said before about when I start describing the way the mind works and the mental laws, as you say, the first observation is actually that thoughts are arising in our minds automatically. And I have that exercise that, you know, if you don't understand this, to sit down in a chair and look at a white wall and stare at the white wall and tell yourself that you're not going to think. And if you sit down and actually do that, you will discover that not more than 10 seconds go by and a thought arises. You say, I don't want to think, I'm not going to think, and you can't do it. The thought arises, oh, I forgot to buy milk in the supermarket today. Oh, my boyfriend said that to me. Oh, and it's like if you do that simple exercise, it's really very enlightening because you discover that thoughts arise automatically. It's not something that we're actually doing. We're actually being thought, you could say, in a way. And that's also a really important thing to notice, because the next thing that I ask the reader to notice is that if you keep on sitting in the chair, if you keep on looking at the white wall and you watch thoughts arise, you will also notice that they disappear. That, in other words, you're sitting there looking at the white wall and you have the thought, oh, I forgot to buy milk in the supermarket. That's a thought arising. And then it's gone, because now you're thinking about, oh, my boyfriend said so-and-so to me this afternoon. And that thought arises and disappears. And then, oh, I remember what I saw on TV. Oh, I forgot to do, oh. And they come and they go. And this is also a very important thing to notice, because when you do this exercise and you notice the thoughts arising and disappearing, who's noticing? Who's observing this going on? And it's like, if you can get that, if you can see that, okay, I was sitting in this chair and the thought arose, I forgot to buy milk in the supermarket, and now it's gone again. I'm still here. And, oh, the thought is arising, you know, my boyfriend said this and that and the other, and it's gone, and I'm still here. Well, who am I? Who am I? And so this understanding, again, this, we're talking about liberation from suffering. We're talking about self-empowerment. If you understand this simple mechanism that you are not your thinking, thoughts arise and disappear, and you're still here. It's like, what? What does that do, right?
Absolutely. It's so simple and so brilliant at once. Oh, it's delicious. And then when you begin that journey of exploring, well, what am I if I'm not my thoughts? Well, then you're on a whole nother road. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you're really going down a road that is self-empowering. I mean, even if you never find the answer that is, you know, the ultimate answer, even in your own mind, at least you were looking in something that was perhaps a little more interesting than sort of being batted around by, you know, whether you got milk or not, you know?
Well, actually, I mean, the thing is that you realize that you are the witness. You are the witness in which the thoughts arise and disappear, and that your identification, which is what the reason why I call my book The Awakening Human Being, is because we are awakening to the mechanism of mind. And this awakening is that you slowed it down so much that you actually can see that you are the witness, and that thoughts arise and disappear, and that the thought, when you identify with the thought, that's what you experience. I mean, again, if you go back to the white wall and you watch the thoughts arise and disappear, if you start to see that, for example, you will discover, you know, okay, I have a cold, and I don't have a cold. I have a headache, I don't have a headache. I'm happy, I'm not happy. I'm sad, I'm not sad. I mean, that all of these things, the thoughts, the emotions, whatever, they are arising and disappearing. They are the impermanent nature, the content. But that even though you had the cold came and it went, and you're still here, right? You were happy and you're sad now, and you're still here. So to see that you remain and you're not the changing scenery is like, it gives you also the ability to stand back and question it and say, well, do I really want to identify with this? Is this really sane, constructive, loving, kind? Is this the way that I want to live my life? I mean, it's just so amazing when you're able to make the shift from total identification with the thought that arises to being the witness.
And in the book, you take nice steps to then begin exploring this. Okay, now we know we're not our thoughts. We aren't the changing scenery, as you put it. I like that. We now have this new tool. And then you give very practical steps in taking that and offer various tools for focusing and investigation that allow us to become proactive in the mental capacity and the mental world going on. Would you like to share with us a little bit about that? I found that your focus tool number one is probably, if we only got one in our whole life, gratitude is probably the best one to work on. if that's as far as anybody ever gets.
I totally agree. It's so true. In part two of the book, I call it the practical application of this understanding of the way the mind works. And what I've tried to do in the second part of the book is I've tried to give the reader a variety of concrete tools that they can use in their daily life to put this information into practice. And to do this, I've divided it up into two types of tools. The one type of tool is what I call focus tools, and the other type of tool is what I call investigation tools. Both of them are based on what we were saying before, that if you understand now that you are not your thoughts, that you can actually step back and observe the thoughts that are arising, and if you also understand that your experience is determined by the thoughts that you are entertaining in your mind, if you are unhappy, if your life is not working for you, if you feel depressed or anxious or angry or any of these sort of negative emotions, then understanding that you are not your thoughts gives you the ability to step back and investigate your thinking. Investigate, that's one type of tool that I have. Investigate your thinking. And then the other type of tool I have is what I call focus tools, which in other words, if you realize that your identification with your thinking is making you unhappy, you can learn to shift the focus of your attention. In other words, what you focus your attention on is what you experience. So if you know this, if you understand that this is a law, then you say, okay, well, maybe I want to change my focus. And that's where, for example, what you were talking about, Jamal, the wonderful tool which is called gratitude comes in. That is probably the easiest, most effective way to change the direction of your life. So I start with a focus tool of gratitude. And actually, if people can just start their mornings with a small exercise, which I describe in the book, for example, to take out a piece of paper when you wake up in the morning and write down everything that you are grateful for in your life at the moment. Just to do that, it will so transform, so change your life. As you said, you don't really need to do anything else if you can do that. But it's a wonderful example of the power of focus. So, but again, as I say in the book, it's not enough to just read this book and to think about it, oh, it's a nice idea and so on. The tools are designed so that if you actually do them, that's what really will change the course of your life. To actually say, okay, I'm not just going to think that it would be nice to be thankful. I'm going to actually take out a piece of paper and write down, what am I grateful for? You know, like, I can walk. I can breathe. I've got food in my refrigerator. You know, all this really simple stuff, if you start to really notice, it's like, whoa. And that will lift your energy, and that will change the whole course of your day if you do that.
Yeah, I really appreciated you were pointing out in the book how surprised you've been in your work to meet so many people who will join you in this, in a workshop or reading books, but the tendency to not practice has just been astounding to you that, you know, it really does take a lot more than just reading a book, and it really does take the commitment and the concentration, the focus
Actually, I mean, what you discover is that real change, and really liberating yourself from a lifetime of, you could say, we've all have this consciousness, and we're all innocently programmed from the day we were born. I mean, we learn these stories from our parents. We go to school and learn it in school. We get it from the media. We're just filled with all kinds of information, and we're innocent kids. We don't question it. So we have all these mental habits, you could say. And if our life is, you know, good and we're happy, fine. But a lot of people are not happy. A lot of people are not satisfied. So the best place to start looking is to try to start looking at what is it that I am believing? What is it that I have been programmed with? And that's the sort of the second kind of tool that I have in the book. I call investigation tools. In other words, to start questioning, if you start listening to what's going on in your own head when you're not feeling well, if you start to identify what are the thoughts that are making you so miserable, and you start to question the validity of them, that is a whole other approach to changing the way your life is working for you. So, I mean, it's just mind-boggling to see what can happen. I mean, I also work as a therapist, so I have people coming to me every day where I do this kind of work with them. If you actually take the time to do these things, you can change your life dramatically. But as you said, and as I say in the book, it's not enough to just read a book. You actually have to do it. And at the end of the book, I actually have suggestions for daily programs. So, I mean, the kind of exercises that you could do, the kind of focus tools you could use, the kind of investigation tools you could use for 10 minutes of this and 15 minutes of that, depending on how much time you really want to spend. But this is really the way to I mean, it's sort of like, you know, if you want to get physically fit, you don't go to the fitness center and train once and then say, I'm never going to train again. I'm fit. I mean, you exercise every day or every other day. Well, it's the same with training your mind. You can't just read a book. You have to actually do it. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
It's fascinating. And perhaps maybe you can share with us in your experience of working with people and making that jump from reading books and attending workshops to actually doing it. What would you say in your observation is the biggest hurdle to get started? It seems like the first step is the hard one, but what is that thing that
well,
seems to
actually,
hold people back?
That's a really good question. What I have discovered, it's really interesting the way the universe hangs together. I have discovered that people come to me when they're in crisis. They don't come to me when they're happy and everything's hunky-dory and, you know, life is good. But it's when they really hit some bumps in the road, you know, like they get divorced or they get sick or they go bankrupt or all three together. But that crisis is actually that when people really are feeling bad, then they say, okay, I need to go to someone. And if they come to me, and then we... It's like crisis is like, it's amazing. It's often, you know, it's like people say, oh, it's terrible and I feel terrible. But I know because I've sat now with so many people and I've also had the experience myself that crisis is actually the open door. It's the moment when the ego, you know, it's like, I can't do this anymore. Help me, God, or whatever, you know. And it's like that's when the light comes in. That's when that moment, the crack, you know, when the light comes in. So
That's very interesting. So that's when the guards come down and there's more receptivity, and that's sort of in the reputation of the human story, that until something gets so critical that we just go along in our little programmed realities and then don't have a need to question, I suppose. But
I'm having a really hard time hearing you suddenly. You're sort of fading. Hello?
Well, I was commenting on how that it is quite a bit of the reputation of the human story that it must have major catastrophe before it moves. You know, that until it reaches
You're not coming through. I'm sorry. Can you ask our sound person to? Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Now you're better. Yes. Good. Okay. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just commenting on how the human story has a reputation of needing crises to motivate it to seek beyond, you know, the routines and things that we all get programmed into. Mm-hmm. And your book allows people to be proactive before that. People can actually start noticing some of the things inside of themselves and get ahead of it. I wonder, would you please talk about, I really think that there's a tremendous value in the emphasis you put on meditation. Would you please talk about meditation and how meditation works for you and how you define it and how you use it as an exercise in your daily practice and how it works for you?
Well, that's a really big subject. But anyway, meditation, I mean, for example, how does anyone discover all the things that we've been talking about? I mean, if you're running around all the time out of focus, you will never find out about the way your mind works. You'll never understand the nature of consciousness. So meditation is actually the number one, I mean, it's the tool, sitting quietly, doing nothing, watching your breathing, watching the nature of consciousness. I mean, how did I find out all these things? I sat in the chair and I watched. I mean, actually, that's what meditation is, really. The most basic meditation, which I describe in the book, formal meditation is, I mean, now I'm not talking about, a lot of people are confused about what they mean by meditation. Or there's a lot of things, you know, visualizations and mantras and this and that and a lot of stuff, which is fine. Don't misunderstand me. But formal, basic, traditional meditation is sitting quietly, doing nothing, watching the breathing, watching the nature of your mind. And that is where you discover all the things that we're talking about. You discover that there is this presence, there is this consciousness, this awareness, which is what you are, and that thoughts are arising and disappearing within this field of consciousness. And that's your nature. That's what you discover when you meditate. When you take your attention away from, you know, what's in the outer, when you stop watching and identifying with the outer, and you turn your attention inward. So meditation is such an important experience for anyone who wants to start working with themselves. I mean, it's the most amazing tool. And the other thing you could say, too, in this connection is that when you start to realize all this stuff and you sit there in this now moment, and then you're present, if you really are present, and then you can say, like, what's wrong with this moment? You know, like, what is preventing me from being happy right now? What is preventing me from fully experiencing the divinity, the radiance, of beingness, which is what I am. So when you sit and meditate, you get to that place where you can actually have this experience, because if you really start to look at the way the world is, I mean, everybody is running around like a chicken without their head, so outer focused that of all these outer things that we think we need to live a happy life, you know, like I have to have the a great job, and I have to have money in the bank, and I have to be thin, and I have to be beautiful, and I have to have a designer kitchen, and I have to have three kids, and I have to, all that stuff. And it's like when you meditate, when you sit quietly doing nothing, it's like, is it, you know, is it true that we need all that? I mean, I'm not saying it's not nice to have stuff, but it's more this frantic idea that that our identity, our happiness, are so outer dependent. So meditation also brings you back to this moment. It brings you back to the radiance that you already are. I mean, we already, whatever it is we're looking for, we're already it.
Mm.
So that's what you find out when you meditate, that you are the happiness you see. You already are it. You don't have to create it. I mean, sometimes I like to use the example that, you know, like our true nature is like, it's like the radiance of the sun, right? That's our true nature. And that the clouds, it's just these clouds that are preventing us from experiencing the radiance of our true nature. And what are these clouds? These clouds are all these thoughts that we have that are blocking our experience of the divinity of what we are already. So in a way you can say, we don't have to learn anything. We really have to unlearn. We have to unlearn all the stuff that's blocking us from experiencing the presence of who we are right now.
Absolutely. Do you have a tip for unlearning? Unlearning is, that is actually, I think, probably the most essential in the mental pursuit. It encompasses two things. One, it smacks right against that presupposed arrogance that we're all programmed with when we're downloaded as children with all these righteous ideas of all this running around and materialism and how important all that is. You know, we're also downloaded with this arrogance that this is the way it is, and this is right, and we are it, and we, you know, we're all this and a bag of chips, as somebody I know says, you know, because we get all this, you know, and we're going to run around and we're going to prove it to everybody. So as soon as you say you have to unlearn that, you have to meet that very well developed sort of kind of scary arrogant being that's developed in you, and it doesn't feel like you, but it's you. You're living in that person's reality. And so how do you unlearn, and how do you manage the beast? We'll call that the beast inside that has matured in this programming, you know?
That's a very good question. Well, I think, first of all, as I said before, that there usually has to be some kind of crisis that sort of breaks the shell enough so that a person is actually willing to begin to question. They're usually, that's why, you know, pain is, somebody said pain is God's megaphone. I mean, it's like, what does it take? There's a lot of people who are just not ready to ask any of these questions or to look at any of these things yet. And that's, you know, that's where they are in their development. So it's usually people who are, as I said before, in some kind of crisis. And that is like the number one thing that sort of starts this whole process, this landslide. It's some, you know, whatever it is that you hit the brick wall, you know, you can't go on like that anymore. And then the pain is so intense that you do something, you have to do something else to survive. So that's good. That's good. And then I usually say to people, well, if we start from the premise that you are the happiness that you seek, that you are divine love, that you are this radiance, that you are the sun, and that there are all these different programs, as you said, or the different thoughts, the different stories, the different things that we've been taught to believe that are making us unhappy. What I usually do with when I work with individuals is I say, well, what area is the most distressing for you in your life right now? And then I ask the person, so the area is your relationship or something like that. Say it's your relationship. So then I say, okay, well, tell me what's the most distressing thing about your relationship. And what we actually do is we write down on a piece of paper the thoughts that this person has that are distressing them the most. And then very, very slowly we take one thought at a time and we start to look at what does this thought have to do with reality. And this is the most amazing exercise to do with people. They get the most amazing shocks and transformation and revelation to actually compare, because that's another one of sort of the key themes in the book, is the difference between, there's a difference between reality and our thinking, and that this causes us so much suffering when they don't match. People who are in crisis are always indulging in what I call catastrophic thinking. In other words, that their thinking is so out of harmony with reality, is so far from what's going on, that they are suffering not because of what's going on, but because of what's going on in their own heads. So you could say that if you sit quietly in a chair, this is an exercise that our listeners can do, and ask yourself right now, what is preventing me from being happy right now? Whatever thoughts come up, write them down on a piece of paper. And then take a look at these thoughts, but do it slowly. If you buy my book, you'll see the techniques about comparing reality to your thinking, how you can do it in a very slow manner, and you will discover to your great delight that, you know, that reality is actually so much kinder than your story. So yeah, this is a life's work. It's a slow process, but the rewards are immense. The rewards are just totally transformative.
So unlearning isn't really like hitting a switch. Unlearning is engaging the process of truly finding out who you are and living, becoming that sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's how you, okay. And would you tell us a little bit about this process that I think is very efficient? You work us through the meditation and the importance of that and various focusing tools, and then you give us an exercise you call the work that gives us a really very four question process that helps us get a little deeper look, because these feelings, these thoughts are connected to feelings. They're connected to the deeper picture in ourselves. And this book doesn't go into that very much, but it gives us a good door to push open on that. And this particular exercise, the work,
The work of Byron Katie. I'm a big fan of Byron Katie, and she has developed what she calls the work, which is these four questions that you can ask. In other words, when you identify thoughts that are really stressful for you, thoughts that are making you unhappy. As we actually had in the very beginning of our talk, I spoke about different way people react when they get divorced. That's a really good example. And sometimes I often have someone come to me who's in the process of getting divorced. And then, you know, we sit down and we say, you know, well, what are your stressful thoughts around getting divorced? And it could be, you know, I'll never find love again, as I said before, I'll be alone for the rest of my life. So then I'll say, okay, so we'll write down these two stressful thoughts, you know, I'll never find love again, and then I'll be alone for the rest of my life. Those are two catastrophic thoughts that I hear often from people who are getting divorced, right? And then the four questions are, you ask yourself, well, is that true? That's the first question, you know. Is it true that you're going to be alone for the rest of your life? And then it's like the person will say, well, gosh, I think so. And then I'll say, well, can you absolutely know that it's true? That's question number two. And they say, well, no, I can't really know that it's true. And it's like, okay, interesting. You don't know. And then the third question is, well, how does it make you feel when you believe this thought? Well, when I believe that I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, I feel pretty lousy. I feel afraid. I feel depressed. And then the fourth question is, well, who would you be without the thought? Okay, I wouldn't be so stressed out of my mind. I'd be, you know, a lot more relaxed about getting divorced. And then you say, well, okay, you discover in this process that when you believe this thought, which you knew now found out is not, you don't even know if it's true. In fact, it's just a thought. There's nothing, there's no proof that you're going to be alone for the rest of your life, but believing that really freaks you out. And that if you can see that it's just a belief that has nothing to hold it up, then you can sort of drop it and you can say, well, the reality is that, okay, I'm, you know, leaving this partner right now, but there are a lot of other people in the world, and there's no proof that I'll be alone for the rest of my life. And then the fifth question is actually the turnaround, which is the opposite of where you started. I'll be alone for the rest of my life. I won't be alone for the rest of my life. That could probably be more true, because most people meet other people. And so actually slowing down the mind and taking a look at a catastrophic thought. That was a catastrophic thought. You're getting divorced and you have this thought, I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. There's nothing in reality to support that. And when you have that thought, then it's also really interesting to notice a thought like that gives birth to a lot of negative emotions, fear, anxiety, worry. And then when you take away this belief, when you see that there's nothing to hold it up, then you don't feel so fearful, worried, or anxious. So you see how much your emotions are based on thinking which you haven't really questioned. So questioning your thinking like that is just so liberating. It brings you back to this. It also brings you back to this moment. Because the reality is that all we have is this moment. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. And all fear is a kind of projection, you know, whatever's happening right now, it's going to go on forever. And it doesn't work like that when you slow it down and you look at it. So it's just so liberating. This is self-empowerment. You're taking the power back, over your own life, man. That's what we want, right? We want to be, you know, like we want to make up our own minds. We want to, like, you know, we don't want to be the victim of stuff out there. So, yeah. So
that's
the
worst. Yeah, we don't like to be the victim, but our those thoughts that we're taught as children seem to groom us to be the victim. The perpetual excuse of that out there is creating my reality is basically
exactly.
What...
Well, that's why I said, here in Scandinavia, where I live, people who have who are you know, studying the mental laws the way that I've formulated them, they always say to me, Barbara, we've got to teach this in school to our kids, man. I mean, just think if we had learned this stuff as kids. And so it's like, you know, yeah, this information. I mean, we couldn't teach our kids before because we didn't know about this stuff. But now, that's why I call it the awakening human being. We're awakening up to this stuff, and we can start teaching the next generation this stuff. I mean, it's just so exciting. I get so excited when it is, as you say, it's liberation, it's self-empowerment. When you don't know about this, you're the victim of forces that you don't understand. But when you start to know this stuff, you're free. You can't be controlled anymore because you can see the mechanism. You can question stuff.
Absolutely. So how do you translate this then in the face of some of the bigger challenges that we have in our world? We have a world that's really ready for a major overhaul. I personally am ready to throw the whole plan of World War III right out the door. I'm completely done with the Gregorian calendar and all their BS 2012 predictions. I have no need for any of that. I am so ready to just, like, start again, and it's a process. So we're meeting it where it is. Okay, so we do have the boat in the water. You know what I mean? It's like we start where we're at.
No matter how you look at it, the world situation, your personal situation, your friend's situation, your family situation, there's only one question, and that is, what are you going to do about it now? You only have now, and you only have here. You Everything else is a thought. So it's this now moment. How are you going to deal with that? How are you going to raise your vibration as high as you can? How are you going to be the most loving, the most spacious, the most kind? How can you raise your energy in this now? I mean, we can't do anything else. That's the way the whole system is set up, where each one of us is, you know, in charge of this. That's all we get. So that's really the only question. Yeah,
that's
what are
great.
But what are you going to do now?
Right.
So, I mean,
and what a kind
of, yeah, you know, like, so to be present now, to be the love, to be, I mean, how are we going to do that? So, I mean, it's all this stuff that's blocking, so you can take care of you. The tools in this book will show you how you can take care of you in this now moment. And that's all anyone can do. But the good news is you can do it. You can sort of get rid of all the stuff, get rid of the clouds, dissolve the clouds that are blocking you from experiencing the radiance, which is your true nature.
That is great. And I want to let the listeners know again, we are speaking with Barbara Berger, and the book she's referring to is her brand new book, The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind. And Barbara, will you please tell us how we can get this book and your websites again?
Well, you can buy the book on Amazon and all the online sites, but you can also get it from our website, www.beamteam.com, BEAMTEAM.com. And as I said before, the first part of the book, where I outline the mental laws, you can download them for free on our website. So, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff on the website you can enjoy, I hope.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much. And we have, we're coming.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about all this stuff, which I'm just so excited about.
Oh, it's beautiful to listen to your enthusiasm and your book. It really pours into this book, and it pours into this book in a very, I would say, heart-centered way, in that when I read the book, I feel like you really want me to understand this. I feel like there's been some thought into making this as accessible as possible, and I feel your love in this. Like, you have this understanding that we all can get this. It's in these pages that you really know this. I really felt that when I was reading this. I was like, man, she's in the heart with this, you know? She's really right there. And your enthusiasm is contagious, you know? And just like the little spark starts the fire. This is why we're all in this together. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Star. Thank you. I'm really touched by what you're saying. Thank you. Really heartfelt.
It's hard, you say?
No, heartfelt.
Oh, heartfelt, yes. Oh, yeah.
From my heart to your heart, thank you.
Oh, thank you. And, we are coming to the last few minutes or so, about 5 minutes, and would you like to share with us, perhaps you're talking about bringing this to our children, and you're talking about the enthusiasm and your awareness of this time that we're getting this information. I wonder if you'd like to share with us your vision, how you see. Do you have a sense of what humanity might be in the evolution of understanding some of these big basic principles and really living them?
Well, I think that, again, what I said before is the key, that the only question, I mean, anything that we would say is a vision of the future is a thought. So, again, the focus that I think is, you know, the only one that's really powerful, the only one that really works, is what are we going to do right now? So it's like, let's just take care of now. Let's each one of us just take care of now. Let's just be present now. Let's just let the love of God, the divinity within, the love in our hearts, let's just feel it now. I mean, everything else will take care of itself. If we can be in alignment with our true nature right now. Because, I mean, it's like we all have this inner voice, this compass, this, I mean, you can call it intuition, you can call it integrity. It's there all the time, but we're just, again, when we're so lost in our stories and we're so busy up in our heads that we don't connect with the wisdom that's already what we are, that's already in us. We all know exactly what to do. If we could just get a little bit quiet and just be here now, it's just, so that's my vision.
Well, that's, I appreciate that, because the whole anxiety, there's a lot of anxiety in future. And as you were saying that, I was catching myself in that. Oh, yeah. And also the power of the thought, the power of your thinking as an active lever in creating, co-creating that. But, you know, staying in the now is really the only thing we can do, and you're absolutely right. The universe has a plan, and it is such an honor to be a part of this plan. This life is such a gift, and we don't need to do anything but be our best selves if we possibly can. And I really appreciate you bringing us back. Mom, don't do anything.
Also, what you just said, that just think about just how amazing it is that we have been given the gift of life. I mean, just think about what, I mean, it's like, it's just so mind-boggling. What is all this? You know, this is us. If this is it, it's like, wow. You know? To be here now and to actually be present in this moment, it's like, whoa, dude.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry?
You have a great laugh. Thank you.
Well, would you like to offer any closing thoughts? And then I'll just give the little sign off.
Okay. Well, as I said before, I would suggest that you ask yourself, what is preventing you from being happy right now? What is preventing you from experiencing the radiance of your own being right now? What is it? What is it that's preventing you? And whatever it is that comes up, whatever your answer is, question that. Take a good look at what is it that's preventing you from being you 100% fully, the radiance of your being right now. Oh, and then look at it, and then decide to be present with who you are. Decide to go within and really experience the divinity of your own nature right now. It doesn't get any better than that.
Bless your heart. Thank you so much, Barbara Berger, and her new book, The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind. You all have been tuned in to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and I hope you all have enjoyed this show at least half as much as I have. This has been really, really fantastic. And I hope you all will take to heart what she said. It is so accessible that we find peace within and share peace without, and let the universe make this world a place we want to live in, because we deserve it. We deserve it. All right. Well, all right then. Signing off for this broadcast. Do take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other, and enjoy the ride. Bye.